I joined the Navy when I was 17. I was not a patriot. Everybody said, oh, hey, you'll see the country. I didn't care about seeing the country or seeing the world. I didn't, all the traveling, that wasn't on my radar at all. I just wanted the money. And the free education, but mostly the money. That's what I wanted. And I lived for 2.5 years in the UK. I lived in Wales for 2.5 years, so saw England, saw all that. Then got stationed on a ship in South Carolina and went all around South America, saw almost every country in South America. I've been to Venezuela, I've been to Ecuador, Peru, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, also Panama, Mexico, Cuba. I've been all those places. I got out of the Navy 6 years later, came home very much a patriot. After seeing what's out there, I saw there is something very, very special about America. And as we come upon our 250-year birthday celebration as a nation, I want to spend a few weeks here just talking about our heritage and what it is that makes America so special. So these sermons are going to be a little different than I love just going through the Word of God. So this is going to be a topical. Hopefully you guys will be gracious with me. This takes me out of my comfort zone here. But to get into this, let me take you through a little bit of Old Testament history. I'm very comfortable with Old Testament history. The Bible records that long, long ago, Moses warned the Israelites, who had been supernaturally delivered from Egypt, their oppression, their bondage in Egypt. God delivered them through a series of powerful miracles. And this is what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Be careful and watch yourselves closely. This is what Moses is writing to them. He's telling them, be careful and watch yourselves closely so you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart. As long as you live, teach them to your children and to their children after them. All these things that God has done for you, you need to remember it. First of all, you need to remember it. You need to pass it on. And just say, remember the deliverance out of bondage in Egypt. Remember how God raised up Moses. Remember the 10 plagues that God performed on Pharaoh through Moses in Egypt, including the angel of death that passed over the Israelites but took the firstborn son of all the Egyptians. Remember how God parted the Red Sea and you passed over on dry land and how the seas collapsed onto the Egyptian army that was pursuing you. Remember all these things. And how God provided manna from heaven as you wandered in the wilderness, and how God provided water from a rock, and how God fought your battles for you. You remember all these. Remember. And then it goes on, and teach them to your children and their children after them. You need to, not only do you need to remember the great things God has done, you need to pass them on. And Joshua did this in Joshua chapter 23. After a long time had passed, and the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around them, Joshua, by then old and well advanced in years, he summoned all of Israel, the elders and the leaders and the judges, the officials. He said to them, I'm old and I'm well advanced in years. You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you. And I'm sure Joshua reminded them that God, once again, he parted the Jordan River at flood stage so you could cross over on dry ground into the promised land. And remember how Jericho collapsed right in front of your eyes when you marched around them in obedience to God, what God asked you to do, and Jericho collapsed. And remember how the sun stood still when we were in battle. Remember all these things that God has done for you. Now, I love the Old Testament. I love the stories in the Old Testament and how God fights for his people. And you see it. You see it in the book of Exodus. You see it in the book of Joshua. And then you get to the book of Judges and get this. Judges chapter 2, verse 10. After that, a whole generation had gathered to their fathers. And another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. What? How can that happen? I mean, it's just three generations into this. And a generation grew up, they didn't know what God had done. It goes on, Judges chapter 2, then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord and the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the people around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him. And they served Baal in the Asherahs. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. And he sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. So I read all this Old Testament history to you, and I'm thinking, do you think it's just stories? Was it all given to us just for our entertainment? Do you think maybe there's something here we're supposed to learn? Do you think there might be something in all this that we're supposed to do as you hear these stories? Let me give you one more verse out of the Old Testament. In Psalm 9, verse 17, it says, the wicked return to the grave, and all the nations who forget God. There's a lesson there. There's a lesson. So that's Old Testament history. I want to transition now to American history, the stuff that probably a lot of people in here were never taught. Maybe you've heard all this before. Everything I'm going to share today, maybe you've heard all this. I have a suspicion that some of us haven't heard any of this. America is true. America is not Israel. But we serve the same God. And many of the promises to Israel are not just for Israel. They're universal promises. In Psalm 33, verse 12, it says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Is that just for Israel? Or is that for any nation that worships God? Psalm 98, verse 2, the Lord has made his salvation known and revealed his righteousness to the nations. It doesn't say to a nation, it says to the nations. He's made his righteousness known to the nations. Why would he do that if he didn't expect us to do something with that knowledge? Job 12, verse 23, he makes the nations great and he destroys them. He enlarges nations and he disperses them. Okay, so the story of America began long before the American Revolution. I'm going to focus a lot today on the next 3 weeks. I'm going to focus on the American Revolution. But before the Revolution, the Pilgrims came, the Puritans came. They arrived in the 1600s. They fled Europe to seek religious freedom. And they wanted to establish a community that aligned aligned with their Christian beliefs. When they came here to America, they wanted to live out their faith with freedom. In settlements like Massachusetts and Pennsylvania and Rhode Island, they were driven by a vision creating a city upon a hill, which comes straight from the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preached. 12 of the original 13 colonies incorporated the entire Ten Commandments into their civil and criminal codes. These early colonies were structured, often structured their government around Christian principles. And all this before the Revolution. And you come to the Declaration of Independence. In the Declaration of Independence, which contains at least 96 biblical references justifying the founders' positions, it ends with these words, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. Look at those words, break it down. What are they saying? With a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. Divine providence, that's God, okay? We rely on God. When the early American colonies sought to gain freedom and independence from Great Britain, many colonists believed their cause was just. We're going to talk a lot about that next week. And because they believed their cause was just, they believed that God would help them. And many found their moral strength and courage to fight because of their faith and reliance on God. They didn't just believe in God, they relied on God. There's a lesson that I want us to learn. Do you believe in God? Thinking, yeah, we all believe in God. Do you rely on God? Are you dependent on God? And when you look at our founding fathers and you look at you know, 200 years ago, the faith of the ones who came before us, they didn't just believe. They relied on God. And you see it in their prayers. I've got several prayers here I want to read. June 1st, 1774, Thomas Jefferson, he called a day of fasting. And that day of fasting led to the Continental Congress, the Congress that eventually, 2 years later, declared their independence. June 12th, 1775, John Adams, he wrote his wife Abigail saying, we have appointed a continental fast. Millions will be upon their knees at once before their great creator, imploring his forgiveness and blessing. John Adams was so excited about this. Millions of people are going to be crying out to God for his favor. March 6, 1776, George Washington, he ordered Thursday the 7th to be set apart as a day of fasting and prayer and humiliation, asking officers and soldiers to implore the Lord, the giver of all victory, to bless the Continental Army with his divine favor and protection. That was during the Battle of Boston, and we're going to talk about that in a second here. But they're praying. They're praying to God, Lord, we need you. May 15th, 1776, General Washington ordered the Continental Congress to set aside May 15th, 1776 as a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer, humbly to supplicate the mercy of Almighty God, that it would please him to pardon all our manifold sins and transgressions, and to prosper the arms of the United Colonies, and finally establish peace and freedom of America upon a solid and lasting foundation. In Congress, I read this, the Congress of the United States issued 16 spiritual proclamations between 1776 and 1784. During 8 years, 16 different spiritual proclamations calling Americans to humble themselves, fast, pray, and give thanks to God. They asked the citizens to seek the Lord during one of the darkest moments of the nation's history. They asked pastors to read the proclamations from the pulpits. The Congress and the preachers were working together. We need God. We need God. And now I've got all these notes on George Washington here. George Washington demonstrated a strong reliance on God's protection and guidance throughout the Revolutionary War, believing God looks favorably upon nations that uphold freedom and justice. Washington often impressed upon his troops the need to rely on God's assistance. In the first major battle after the United States declared independence, the Battle of Long Island in New York in 1776, Washington encouraged his troops to trust in America's cause and God's aid. He exhorted, "Let us therefore rely upon the goodness of the cause and the aid of the supreme being in whose hand victory is." Remember the picture of Valley Forge when George Washington's praying at Valley Forge? Isaac Potts, he witnessed Washington praying, and he said, "I saw a man on his knees praying most fervently in the snow. Such a prayer I have never heard from the lips of man." When George Washington prayed, he really prayed. He poured his heart out to God. He firmly believed that God is moved by the prayers of and faithfulness of men. To win the revolution, he and his army needed to prepare not only militarily, but spiritually in order to gain the favor of divine providence. That's his words for God right there. And with support of Congress, he ordered the appointment of military chaplains and daily officer-led prayers. He expected his officers to be in prayer daily. His devotion and dependence on God impelled him to act and lead the Continental Army with humility and courage and discipline and endurance. And because of his conviction, Washington led his troops to practice religious and moral discipline and to regularly offer thanksgiving to God during the war's trials and successes. And get this, I thought this was interesting. He forbid cussing and swearing in offensive oaths and profanity and blasphemy, gambling and drunkenness. He essentially banned any conduct that he thought might offend God. You dare not offend God because we desperately need him. So act like it. Behave. That's what he's saying to these people. All right, so that's George Washington. And then Ben Franklin, he's famous for this. This is what he says. How has it happened, sir, that we have, I can't read this, it's all old English here. How has it happened, sir, that we have not hitherto once thought to humbly apply to the Father of lights to illuminate our understandings? In the beginnings of this creation with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a supertending providence in our favor. To that kind of providence, we owe this happy opportunity to consult in peace on the means of establishing the future national facilities. Felicities, I don't know what he's saying. And have we now forgotten that powerful friend? I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, it is probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord build the house, they that labor in vain that build it. Does that sound like a deist? People say he's a deist. If he's a deist, he's more Christian than most Christians. At every step, I'm trying to say, every step along the way, our founding fathers cried out to God. They prayed not just for victory, they prayed for righteousness and wisdom and unity and for God's favor and for God's help and for God's blessing, and God answered. And you see this, there's books out there on all the miracles of the American Revolution, and I just want to read some of these before the Revolution. You heard there's a movie coming out, Young Washington. I've not seen it yet. I'm anxious to see that. But this is my understanding that Washington, he had more lives than cats. He survived smallpox as a child. He encountered a Native American war party while he was surveying the land. He survived a series of campaigns that killed a third of his men. And when he was 23 years old, George Washington, at this time he was working with the British Army, George Washington was one of 1,400 troops under the command of General Braddock marching to capture a fort near Pittsburgh. And when they were attacked by a French and Indian force during the battle, General Braddock, he was killed, and every officer on horseback was shot except for George Washington. And there was a Native American there who fought the battle. He said, Washington was never born to be killed by a bullet. He said, I had 17 fair fires at him. Basically, I had 17 shots with my rifle, and after all, could not bring him to the ground. Could not bring George Washington. Why? I shot him 17 times. Missed 17 times, and I don't miss. That's what he's saying. Something special about George Washington. And George Washington later, he wrote to his brother, but by the all-powerful dispensation of providence, I have been protected beyond all human probability of expectation. For I had 4 bullets through my coat and 2 horses shot from under me and yet escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me. Everybody around him was dying, and he survived. That was before the American Revolution. At that moment, he knew, and I think everybody else knew, God's hand is on this man. And then you get to the Revolution itself. In Boston, March 1776, George Washington, his first challenge was to outsmart the British forces who occupied the city of Boston. He made his headquarters in Cambridge. And the British had more troops, they had more cannons, they had more gunpowder, and they were very well trained. And the Americans were just basically a group of farmers. They didn't have a chance. They had no chance. And one night, Washington pulled off a great surprise in total silence in the darkness of night, and with the help of a fog that came out of nowhere, he moved his army up to Dorchester Heights. Being on higher ground was a great advantage. At daybreak, the British commanders looking at the heights could scarcely believe their eyes as they saw the Americans on high ground. General Howe, the British general, he said, "These fellows have done more work in one night than I could make my army do in 3 months." General Howe, he decided to attack at night. You know, so he sees, okay, they're up on the hill. That's not good, but we're bigger than them. We can still whoop them. And so he decides, okay, we're going to attack at night. That whole day was a beautiful day. It's March. It's a beautiful, warm spring day in March. That night, a hurricane came out of nowhere. And with freezing rain and snow and sleet, By midnight, the wind blew with almost a hurricane force, and windows were smashed and fences were blown over. One American lieutenant called it the worst storm that he'd ever encountered. And the British general had no choice. He could not fight under these conditions. Driving sleet made the still frozen earth near the crest of Dorchester Heights so slippery that it became unthinkable for the British troops to ascend the slope, especially with the pushing winds and the freezing downpour. So instead, the entire British army evacuated the city of Boston without even a fight. If it wasn't for that blizzard that came out of nowhere, American history could have been very, very different. And George Washington, once again, he writes to his brother, "This remarkable interposition of providence is for some wise purpose, I have no doubt." Saying God is up to something. I don't know what it is, but God is moving. God is doing. God protected us. A fog that came out of nowhere, the blizzard that kept the British from fighting. Then you get to Brooklyn, the escape from Brooklyn. After the disastrous Battle of Long Island, the Continental Army faced complete annihilation. They were trapped by the British forces, the East River at their backs. Defeat seemed certain, and yet on the night of August 29th, another thick fog rolled in, so dense that even at close range, visibility was nearly zero. And under the cover of this inexplicable fog, Washington silently evacuated 9,000 troops across the river. The fog lasted just long enough for Washington and his men to make their escape. A fog came out of nowhere. He moved 9,000 men in the middle of the night. A loyalist that saw what was going on sent a servant to the British to tell them the Americans were escaping. But that messenger who was going to the British, he was detained by the Hessian troops who didn't speak English, the Germans. The Germans stopped the messenger, and they didn't speak English, so they kept him all night. They didn't know what Washington was doing. The British awoke to an empty battlefield. No one can explain the fog's timing or the intensity, but its impact was undeniable. Once again, providence seemed to have intervened. One American soldier said, "Providentially for us, a great fog arose, which prevented the enemy from seeing our retreat." The outcome of this battle has been described as so astonishing that many, including General Washington, attribute that safe retreat of the American army to the hand of God. It could be explained no other way. It was the hand of God. And then I got on here in Trenton when they crossed the Delaware River. The river was frozen. Man, they crossed. I mean, they're taking their boats through it. And it was just, I don't understand everything that was going on. It was just, they cross the Delaware River. This is December. This is Christmas Day. That night, they surprised the Hessians in Trenton, and what followed was a crucial victory in the American Revolution. Had the weather shifted just slightly, that operation could have failed catastrophically. Instead, ice cleared just enough for successful crossing. The improbable triumph revitalized the revolutionary cause. The Americans attacked at sunrise on December 26th during a driving snowstorm with the wind at their backs and blowing right into the faces of the Hessian troops who had been celebrating Christmas the day before. In less than an hour, the Americans captured 1,000 Hessians and lost only a few men. The artillery officer, Henry Knox, he wrote of the victory, "Providence seemed to have smiled on every part of the enterprise." Story after story. Let me give you another one here. I got two more. Two more now. I'll shut up because I don't want to put anybody to sleep here. Too late? Wake up. Okay, wake up. General Benedict Arnold. You know that name. He's a traitor. And what happened here? Treasonous actions of General Benedict Arnold were discovered surprisingly during a turn of events. Arnold was plotting to turn the American garrison at West Point, a key position for the control of the Hudson River, over to the British in return for a payment of 20,000 pounds, which what I read, that's $1 million in today's money. Now, right there, first of all, notice right there, he was going to sell out George Washington and the American troops for $1 million. Now, what really caught me on that was that Benedict Arnold had no principles. And you look at the founding fathers who were very principled men. They lived by faith. And apparently, General Benedict Arnold, he didn't have any faith at all. He just wanted money. It was all for the greed. But this is what happened. Several American sentries happened to stop Major John Andre, dressed as a civilian, as he attempted to return to the British lines. In a hollow space in his boot, they found a map of West Point that detailed the impending attack. So they stop the stranger. They find a note in his boot. The person they stop happens to be like the CIA of the British troops, John Andre. And unexpectedly apprehended Major Andre and discovered Benedict Arnold's treachery was widely viewed as an act of divine protection. The fact they found this was widely viewed as divine protection. Yale President Ezra Stiles, he wrote in 1873, a providential miracle detected the conspiracy of Arnold. The body of the American army then at West Point, with His Excellency General Washington himself, were to have been rendered into the hands of the enemy. But it's a providential miracle that all this was discovered. This could have wiped out the American army. But somehow it was discovered. And then one last thing, Yorktown, the surrender at Yorktown, when Cornwallis, he surrendered. At that time, it was the culminating victory at Yorktown was sealed in an unexpected event. The arrival of the French fleet, combined with the perfect positioning of the American forces, trapped the British army. Apparently, the French arrived just in the nick of time. And because they arrived, Cornwallis was surrounded, had nowhere to go, and this was effectively the end of the war. Storms had delayed British reinforcements just long enough to give the Allied American French forces the upper hand. Again, the timing played a role too perfect to ignore. Miracle after miracle after miracle. Story after story after story of divine intervention. And I say all this to say, most of this stuff's never taught today. Most people don't know any of these stories. It was clear during and after the American Revolution that God had blessed the American efforts for independence. The hand of God had intervened again and again and again to guide the events at such a crucial time, but few people remember this today. And as a result, a lot of Americans do not live for God today. They have forgotten God. I go back to Benjamin Franklin. He says, I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth. God governs in the affairs of man. He did it in the Old Testament. He did it in the New Testament. He's done it for America. He's still doing it today. Are we aware of this? Are we oblivious to this? Have we forgotten this? Many modern Americans and citizens of the world have forgotten this important lesson of history that is plainly revealed in the scriptures. As Americans observe the 250th anniversary of our independence, let us take heed, let us remember, let us make sure we do not forget that the Lord our God has blessed us. He's blessed this nation so we can and so that we should worship Him with freedom and with thanksgiving and with humility and with dependence. And I say all that, Proverbs 14, verse 34, righteousness exalts a nation. If we want America to be blessed, it has been blessed. If we want it to continue to be blessed, you and I need to be faithful. You and I need to be dependent on God. You and I need to be praying to God. Remembering the miracles of the Revolution and the prayers of our founding fathers is my hope that we will not be like the generation in the book of Judges who knew neither the Lord nor what He had done, who did evil in the eyes of the Lord, who forsook the Lord, who provoked the Lord to anger. I don't want us to be like them. I don't want our children to be like that. I don't want my grandchildren to be like them. We need to remember all that God has done. We need to praise His name. Just a few more thoughts here. The odds of the colonies defeating the most powerful nation in the 18th century of the world, the British Empire, we had no chance. America had no chance. Yet it happened. And you can only say it happened because it was a miracle by the hand of God that America gained their freedom from the oppression that they were under in England, from England. America faced insurmountable odds. The largest army in the world, with the largest navy in the world, the largest empire in history, the British Empire, America fought a superior enemy and defeated them. And my question is, how? Just got lucky? Anybody want to go there? They just got lucky? No. So we give God the glory. And as we give God the glory, we learn the lessons of history. And we remember what the Lord has done. And we teach the lessons to our children and to our grandchildren. And we live our lives seeking God, depending on God, devoted to God. So my challenge for us today, let us renew our devotion to God and our gratefulness to God for all the ways He has blessed us, all the ways He's blessed this nation. Do you realize how blessed you are to be an American? If you don't realize that, get out of the country for a couple days. It doesn't take long. You come back and you realize there's something special going on here. Don't take that for granted. Let's continue to live faithfully and righteously, dependent on God to guide us and to help us and protect us from anything that would harm us. And let us understand the blessings of liberty are not guaranteed. They need to be understood, and they need to be cherished, and they need to be defended. I got so much more I want to say, but I'm going to save it for next week. And next week's going to be, even if you didn't like this week, next week's going to be good, all right? So come back next week, all right? I'm excited about next week. I had to put all this stuff back. Okay, wait. Next week it'll make more sense. All right, so there we go.